Welcome to Novo Ed Talks, where we reveal real-world strategies and expert insights from learning and development professionals. In every episode, we chat with practitioners, course designers, learning strategists, and business leads. We hear about their experiences in the learning industry and predictions for the profession and the trends that they're seeing. But before we get started, a little bit about Novo Ed. Founded at Stanford's Social Algorithms Lab in 2012, NovoEd is a people-centric, capability-building platform that combines social and collaborative learning to drive performance readiness at scale. Through cohort-based experiences centered around human interaction, NovoEd taps into collective wisdom, placing each learner at the center of perspective, application, and expertise. Large enterprises such as 3M, GE, Marriott International, and Nestle partner with NovoEd to accelerate their critical initiatives, reconnect teams, and achieve rapid alignment through learning that is felt, experienced, and swiftly transformed into impact. Now, let's meet our guest for today's episode. Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of the NovoEd Talks podcast, a place for training trailblazers to get real. I'm Lynn Christensen-Esker of NovoEd. And today I'm joined by James Phillips, the Senior Director of Learning at Chartwell Retirement Residences, Canada's largest provider of seniors housing. James has talked a lot with me about how he, like Chartwell's mission, is all about making people's lives better through workplace learning, leading a team of learning professionals and engaged stakeholders who are transforming the way Chartwell learns. So I think he's going to have some great perspectives to share with us today. James, welcome to Novo Ed Talks. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and your role in your company?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me here, Lynn. It's great to connect with you again. I have been in workplace learning for over two decades. And prior to that, I was heavily involved in training my team members when I was managing various operational departments. For me, learning has always been an operational department, and it's really critical for an organization to have success. My team is responsible for some key initiatives, such as compliance training, onboarding, leadership development. We do new hire training for core roles. We support strategic initiatives and technology rollouts. One of the other really important things that we do, though, and this is something that often gets forgotten, is we're responsible for managing the company's learning ecosystem. That includes various platforms, establishing standards and best practices, doing reporting, and generally making sure that there is a plan, because we have a sort of a centralized, decentralized mix of learning.
A lot of times we'll see highly, highly distributed functions, or we'll see very centralized. So you're somewhere in the middle?
Yeah. And when you think about what it is that we do, it makes perfect sense. So we offer retirement living options for people in four provinces. Each of the provinces has their own legislation. So in some cases, it's pretty standard across the board. In other cases, it's customized. We provide meals. We provide different activities. We have direct care, so that, you know, in some cases we've got memory living areas where people who are living with dementia live. In some cases, there's assisted care. So there's a wide range of things that goes on in our various residences. One of the reasons why we have the centralized is because we want to make sure that there's consistency. The reality is, in any given organization, you've got people at the operational unit that are really into training and really into sharing the information and really comfortable with it. And you've got others that are maybe not as comfortable. So the consistency isn't there. Where we come into play is where that consistency is required, or where there's a compliance requirement, or where we're trying to address a common approach to things. We don't have enough resources to do everything, though. So there is that decentralization. We partner a lot with the food and beverage, with the direct care teams, with the sales and marketing teams, and it works. It gets complicated sometimes, but it works.
Well, I mean, that makes sense. And I think you sort of answered my next question here, which was who are your learners? So it sounds like you've got the corporate and then you've got the on the ground, actual,
Exactly.
frontline employees. Okay. So what are some of their challenges?
One of the challenges that I think all of them have is getting the information when they need it. You want to feel competent. You want to be able to do the job right. Our corporate vision is making people's lives better. And if you don't actually know how to do the task, you're not going to make their lives better. You probably are making it worse. So, one of the issues that we have is making sure that the content is available to them, easily discovered, and easily understood. And, these are challenges that I think every organization has. The other one that we've had to deal with is the volume of things that people need to know. If you're in a regulated industry, you know what it's like. You've got your traditional health and safety issues that you have to do. You have your task oriented, then you have something which is like an industry compliance requirement, and then you have your corporate approach to doing something. So you might have your sales strategy that you have to train, and then there's the different tools that people are using. So it's not just as easy as saying, okay, this person is a housekeeper or this person is maintenance manager.
So how do you approach those challenges from a learning perspective?
Gingerly. Well, we spend an awful lot of time partnering, and when we're looking at our challenges, we really have got four challenges, and three of them are design and development, and then there's the distribution challenge. So we've got four strategies that we leverage. The first one is simplifying. Michael Allen has a really great approach, the 3M approach, where he talks about meaningful, memorable, and motivational learning. And as much as I love Michael's books and his approach, we actually have expanded that, and we do what we call 5M learning. So it's meaningful, memorable, and motivational learning experiences that provide maximum benefit for minimal investment on the learner's part. When we design our experiences, we design it around that. The second piece is when we're doing instructor-led training, we try to avoid things that can be done in e-learning, and we really focus on application and mastery. So to get the basic gist, you go through, you do the e-learning, but then what we do is we focus on how are you going to apply it? How are you going to be using this report? What decisions are you going to be making? Another thing that we really focus on is simplifying how we write. We're in Canada, which means that we are providing content in two languages. We also have a large member of or large number of our audiences who speak English or French as a secondary or a tertiary or other language. So we need to make sure that the content that we're creating is easy to understand and not confusing. So it's simple things like focusing on short words instead of long words, common words instead of jargon, using shorter sentences rather than these long Henry James-like sentences like the one I just did. Using the active voice rather than the passive voice. This is good because people who speak English or French as a second language find it easier to use, and our translators love it because it's so much faster for them to translate. The other thing that we do in terms of simplification is modular design. So we're creating a series of food and beverage videos, little short micro videos, almost like a YouTube approach, walking through different recipes and cooking techniques. And that's something that we're partnering with our food and beverage team. The approach that we've got is we're using the recipes that the residences use as our script. We have some transitions or bumpers between the different parts of the video, and we've built a library of images that we can pop in. So, we've got dozens of different ingredients, and not all of them are going to be in any one recipe. But if we have a recipe, we go there, we find it, we pop it in, and it speeds up the process tremendously. So simplification is one important strategy. Partnering is another. Partnering begins before a project starts. So we communicate with senior leaders and our stakeholders to identify projects that are on their roadmap so that we don't get ambushed. When the project starts, we ask an awful lot of questions to really understand the operational impact. We work with a number of teams on a number of projects, and sometimes we have visibility that the project team doesn't. So if the change is going to have, let's say it's a sales change, and it's going to have an impact on our care department or on our finance department, we can call that out. And we'll ask, how does that affect it? And sometimes that means that we have to broaden the tent and bring more people in. And sometimes it means that projects get delayed a little bit so that they get scoped out a little bit better. And sometimes it just means that we have a better end product, but we have the same deadlines. And the other thing that we do, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but we try to involve our partners in the design process as much as possible. We work with them so that they provide us with better content. We involve them in storyboard reviews. We do script table reads before we actually do the recording. And you know, the reason why we do that is so that they're making their comments before we invest too much time in actually building it. And of course, we have them with the quality assurance reviews. And when we pilot, we have them heavily involved in that. When we're delivering webinars, we make sure that their subject matter experts are there. But basically, it's not a matter of they dump content on us and they leave. It really, truly is a partnership. I'm going to shift gears just for a second. I'm going to talk a little bit about hosting content, and then I'm going to go back to the fourth strategy. So for hosting content, we're in a really interesting point because 5 years ago, we got our first LMS, or rather, we got two LMSs. That covers about 70% of our learning audience. The other 30%, we don't currently have a solution for them. There's no learning management system. Now, we're working on an enterprise solution, but for the time being, we need to be able to make content available. So what we've done is we've built out what we call Learning Zone in our SharePoint site. And that's where people can find all the information, all the links that they need. For the people that don't have an LMS, we publish the courses to the cloud. They take the course, they fill out a Microsoft form to let us know they've completed it and so that we can track completion. If they're on one of the two LMSs, there's actually a link to that course. So they click on it, it goes right to the LMS and it opens it. So it's not an elegant solution, but it is a solution. The last thing that we do to try to get around the constraints is we've expanded our faculty. So we use corporate experts to help deliver instructor-led sessions. We've taught some of our corporate partners how to create audio assets. And this is fantastic for us because we can create the assets in both languages. Also, we've worked with some of the teams to teach them how to create viable, instructionally sound learning activities. And this changes our role. So we're not necessarily building the content. We're providing consultation. We're reviewing scripts. We're working with them on some of their different ways of engaging the users. And then once the content is finalized, because it tends to be videos or you know, to a lesser extent, infographics, once that's done, they send it over to us. If it's a video, we put it into a SCORM wrapper. If it's a PDF, we post it on Learning Zone. But it gives them the fun. Like, what we do is fun. It's fun being a learning professional. It's fun creating or delivering or doing voiceover. And a lot of departments don't have that opportunity to have fun all the time. So, you know, they're all excited. They work really hard on it. They want to do the best that they can. And it also means that they're maximizing their time spent on high value. They don't have to deliver the same thing over and over and over again. They can answer people's questions. They can do troubleshooting. They can address variances. So it's a big win, and it takes a lot of work, especially at the beginning. But I honestly don't think we'd be able to get things done if we hadn't approached it that way.
You know, that sort of evolution of how people learn to and what they need to be taught. Yeah, it is a lot of fun. I'm sure you have some great case studies, examples of successes that you've had. Would you mind sharing any of those?
Well, you know what? One of the best ones for me is that we've worked very closely with our occupational health and safety team. And we went through that whole evolution. So first of all, we taught them how to provide better content. We had them work with us on converting some PowerPoint-based content into a far better e-learning content. We worked with them on creating the audio assets. And then they actually had a summer student that said, hey, we can build videos in Canva. So we started working with them. We focused on the storyboards and with the script review. Then we went through, I think it was three rounds of table reads. That was on the very first video. Then they built their second one, and we were able to get down to two table reads. And now, depending on what the content is that they're building, sometimes we just focus on the script review. Sometimes we do the table read, especially if the person that's going to be narrating it is a first timer, or if the person who wrote it is a first timer. But the net result is that we're able to put out more content, because there's no way in the world we would even be able to work on this. It's content that is really focused on what the need of that department is and what the people in the residence need. It means that the call-in sessions that they have are not information sharing, not process sharing, but they're actually rather solving issues. So how do I do this in this circumstance? Or why won't it let me do this? It makes it more meaningful, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. And so in terms of like, how do they solve it? Like, how do you currently measure the effectiveness? I mean, how can you tell that they've been able to solve that issue?
Well, I think that Jack and Patty Phillips would agree that measuring the impact of learning is more of an art than it is a science. And when you don't have the measurement gathering tools, you sort of adapt to how you do it. And like I said, I came into workplace learning from operations. So I start with operational metrics. Some of our key metrics that we have are things like employee engagement survey results and resident satisfaction survey results. Those are fantastic, and they're also segmented into different topics. The drawback there is that they're done once a year. So we do take a look at it year over year, and we also work with those departments. If they're finding that there's certain trends and the different residences are coming up with action plans, we'll take a look at it and see, do we have a solution for this? Do we need to let people know there's that solution? Do we need to work with that team on building it? And then, because they have regular contact with the residences and they're often in the residences, then they get back to us on it. Financial performance is obviously a big thing. Our costs under control, our the suites occupied. Compliance requirements are another thing. Every one of our residences will have government inspectors come in at least once a year. We do regular fire drills and regular emergency procedure audits, and we have a team that goes in and audits some of the other tasks. So those are some of the metrics that we have. We also take a look at others that need a little bit more interpretation. So we have a leadership development program that's aimed for existing residence managers who would like to become a general manager of a residence or the equivalent corporate role. And we take a look at the number of people who've graduated from that program and how many of them have been promoted into those roles in the first year, the second year, and the third year. We get information from both participants and in some cases, their managers on post-workshop performance. So if they've gone through one of our core programs, we ask them about that.
I mean, that kind of brings up, it kind of goes back to what you and I were talking about before we hit record here, which was sort of, may you live in interesting times. So I know you've seen a lot of changes, you know, in your career and in learning, and we're continuing to see just a massive amount of disruption and change in the industry as well. Where do you see the future of L&D? Are there any like trends or emerging technologies that you believe will shape the way that organizations invest in employee growth?
We do have some things which are going to be changing. Technology is one of them, but there's a lot of things that are not going to change. People are still going to need to acquire new knowledge, and they're going to need to master new skills. And frankly, they're going to need to unlearn some of the things that they're doing. They're going to have to understand the principles as much as the technology. Because really, when it comes right down to it, you can build a self-paced e-learning-ish activity with a PowerPoint show, or you can build it in VR. How you build it is transferable. The tool you use is different. People are going to consume learning in different ways. Learning audiences are going to be more diverse, and this doesn't matter where you are. The other things that I think are going to stay the same are that people will need full-time access to content. They need to find that information when they need to use that information. They need to understand how to fill out something on an app, when they have to fill out something on an app. And learning professionals are going to have to address that. The very last thing that I want to say here is, it's so tempting to listen to all of the AI piece and say, oh, we can do this, we can do this, we can do this. And then you start learning one particular tool, and then there's something else which is brighter and sexier and easier to use. So, you know, that's going to continue. The important thing that you need to focus on, that I need to focus on, is not the tool itself. It's what skills are we going to have. Writing prompts is different than writing a job aid. Writing a job aid is different than writing a user guide. Writing a user guide is different than writing a interactive scenario-based script. So if you can master those skills, doesn't matter what tool you're using. But you need those basic skills. And that's one of the opportunities for the learning and development community in general. We need to make sure that when people do want to commit to be learning professionals, that they're learning these skills, that they're learning about the whole ecosystem, because content is useless if people can't find it.
Well, I couldn't ask for a better wrap up than that. That was some excellent advice, James. James, thank you so much for your time. It's been wonderful to hear your insights. I really loved that 5M thing that you mentioned earlier. I'm going to have to go back and listen to what that was again, because that was excellent. Thanks to everyone for joining us in this episode, and see you next time on the Novo Ed Talks podcast.
Thank you for having me.